This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
The Grand Bigs. Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Haw. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report with Brad Biggs.
Bigs time.
Biggs.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Brad Biggs is a football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
You know, it's sad in a way that a lot of people were relying on Trey Smith to be let hit free agency and to figure. It never made a ton of sense, just because, you know, the guy's a really good player, just because teams don't let good players go, just because they came out of the Super Bowl and said they had to fix their offensive line. And you just wondered how those things would add up to him being on the open market. And, of course, the salary cap went up a bit. So it kind of changed the things a little bit, I believe. Is it a disappointment, maybe just for fantasy football players, that the Bears won't be landing the big fish from Kansas City?
Well, I mean, the more talented players that are available, the better things are going to be. But it's a disappointing blow for those who have got the Bears, you know, signing 7 to 8 players making $15 million or more a year in free agency. I mean, that's a setback for them, and they're going to have to regroup and take a look at it and figure out where they go from here. But yeah, I began the week, guys, thinking, you know, is he part of the Cadillac plan? And I don't know the answer, because we're not going to see him get to the open market here. But it's you're talking about paying so much money to an interior offensive lineman that, okay, what else can you do here? Like, how else can you allocate the money? How expensive would some other players that are pretty good, maybe not as good as Trey Smith, going to be? And what does that flexibility look like? Because the Bears are multiple pieces away here. Like, if this was a situation where you said they got to get a guard, and they got to do one other thing, and maybe they can spruce up another position or two, but they got to get a guard. Okay, that's great. Go for Trey Smith. Be comfortable paying him. They've got to accomplish a lot of things here.
Well, it's a moot point now, so the debate is futile. What about next? What's plan B? How do you pivot from this? Is Drew Dahlman, the Falcons center, a realistic option, even if you might have to overpay him? And, Brad, what is the marketplace going to dictate for a center? Could he be a $15 million a year guy?
Well, I think Drew Dahlman's the best center that's available. 26, you know, been pretty durable with the exception of missing some time with an ankle injury this past season. But Stanford product, so you'd be getting a smart guy. His father played offensive line in the league. So this is a guy who grew up around the game, knows how to be a professional. And we're talking about a position where the Bears have struggled to get beyond kind of a year-to-year plan. They've used four starting centers in week one over the last 5 years. And the guy who kind of held it down but not too long ago was Cody Whitehair, who was probably better at guard. And but by need had been moved inside. I want to say he had 61 of his 118 starts for the Bears. It's a center position, so poor draft for the center position. So yeah, I think Dahlman could do real well for himself on the open market here. The top of the market is at about $18 million. That's Creed Humphrey in Kansas City, who got that this past year. And then you have to go a ways to get to number two, and that's Frank Ragnow of the Detroit Lions at $13.5 million. And some people might say, well, you know, Drew Dahlman's not the second-best center or third-best center in football. I don't think people are going to argue that, but you know what he is? He is the guy that's coming on the marketplace. He is the guy that's available. And it's what the market will bear. And as you guys mentioned, you know, the cap's gone up. So I could certainly see him challenging Ragnow for the being the second highest paid center in the league. Hmm.
So, you know, they seemingly, the priorities don't change. You just have one player off the market. Does that mean that the priority shifts to the draft? Does that mean... I mean, surely you're going to sign some players here, and surely you've got to get offensive linemen. But I'm just asking, does this kind of indicate that maybe they don't have as much leeway at the top of the draft that you thought they might?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on how things fall here. I really do. If they sign Drew Dahlman, and they get a guard that they're really happy about, a guard that they believe can be, you know, a guy for them for 3 years anyway.
Right.
You're talking about getting two-thirds of that inside piece fixed. Then you could add a bridge player at some point, right? You could sign a guy where, you know, you'd be comfortable with him for a year, or you could simply wait until the draft. And if you sign that bridge guy, you could still select one in the draft. Like, ultimately, right, you want to get to a position where you're not really pigeonholed going into the draft in terms of what you got to do. And best player available is sort of a that's this utopia. Like, it's not reality. But you get as close to it as you can. And if they can get to a point where best player available is choosing between an offensive lineman, an edge rusher, and maybe a defensive tackle, and this is a fantastic draft for defensive linemen, that's putting them in a decent spot. You know, if they have to draft an offensive lineman, that's not the worst position to be in, looking at how the board might fall, and it's really early. But you want to have some more flexibility. I talked to a defensive coordinator yesterday morning, guys, and his eyes lit up talking about the group of defensive linemen here. There's like 73 of them, which is unbelievable. But he thinks it's an incredibly deep draft where there's a lot of talent to get at, not just in the top 10 or round one, but stretching into day three.
Back to the offensive line, that's impressive. But when you talk about the offensive line and the interior line, especially the guard position, Brad, you mentioned maybe a bridge guy. Are you referring to maybe Zeitler from the Lions? Do you think that Mekhi Becton is still in play? There's some word that he's maybe staying in Philly. Are there any other names out there that resonate with you or you think might with the Bears?
I mean, Zeitler would strictly be a bridge guy. I think he's going to be 35 this year. He played in Detroit for the first time in his career this past season. But he's been around a long time. And, that's a bridge guy. If they go for someone like Aaron Banks, former Notre Dame player that's been with the 49ers, you know, that's more of an investment where you're hoping you've got a guy that can really play for you moving forward. Whether it's what that looks like, I'm not sure. 3-year deal, 4-year deal, but you know, you're looking for the opposite of what you got from Nate Davis, and you're going to have to pay more. Like Banks is probably going to get, you know, $14 million a year, something in that range. So they're going to be busy, I would imagine, at the offensive line store when they get to free agency. They have to be. They don't have a choice. Like,
right.
You know, they want to make it work with this quarterback. They got to give him the best chance possible, and the prices are going to be sky high down at the O-line store, guys. Dan Moore, Pittsburgh Steelers left tackle. One team told me he's going to get $16 million a year.
Wow.
Another team told me that it could go to 18. And you should probably, listeners need to be real with themselves. I mean, how many folks out there know who Dan Moore is?
No.
The Steelers left tackle.
I'm curious, what will happen with the Bears, their own guys, right? Does it change the way you look at maybe trying to get Tevin Jenkins back for a year? Does it change the way you look at Sheldon Coleman? Does it change the way you prioritize Matt Pryor?
I don't think there's any way they can talk about bringing back Tevin Jenkins. Like he needs a fresh start elsewhere.
Right.
Like whatever they had going on here wasn't working. The guy could not finish way too many ball games. That's a hard no. Some people think he's going to get a decent payday, and I'm like,
I saw him, Brad. I saw him listed as the 10th best offensive lineman available.
Yeah, I mean, if you sign him, you better be prepared for him to miss. Two or three ball games and not finish another 4 or 5. Like, I mean, you better be prepared. Just based on his history the past 3 seasons with the Chicago Bears. Coleman Shelton out of he played for $3 million this past year.
Yeah.
He might do a little bit better for himself just based on need. And again, it's a particularly poor draft at that position in the draft. But Matt Pryor is another sort of bridge depth guy that I don't think they would rule out at this point. But whether they're interested in him or not could hinge on how some of the other things play out for more frontline guys.
Just to answer your question, Dan Moore is a fourth-year offensive tackle from Texas A&M, Brad. He was a fourth-round draft pick in 2021. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm sure you've...
He had that written down in front of him.
Guys, Dave's got Wikipedia working in the studio this morning.
Well, speaking of Texas A&M, guys, so yesterday, Shamar Stewart, 6'5", 267, defensive end, ran a 4.59 40. 40-inch vertical, 10-11 broad jump. It was in the 99th percentile of combine performances ever. You know that Ryan Poles is a traits guy. Might Shamar Stewart work his way onto the Bears' board?
I mean, he could be on there somewhere, but I think the problem with Shamar Stewart is how does he play football? Like he's physically the guy's wildly gifted, right? Shamar Stewart had 4.5 sacks in 3 seasons of college football, so the production does not match the athletic ability. Like there's a huge disparity there, so he's one of those guys that Not at 10. I mean, no way. Yeah, no. So and you know what? I mean, someone's going to feel like they can coach him up and get that out of him. But Yeah, just it's a classic example of the athletic ability just doesn't flash on tape, at least with the production.
What would you do if you had a chance to take Abdul Carter at 10? I mean, 10 seems like worthy of risk, but it's hard to say because you haven't seen the medical.
Yeah, I just if he doesn't require surgery and is going to work out at his pro day, I don't know that it's going to ding him a whole lot. Like, you're going to there's probably a lot of information to get to with him. The Bears didn't have such good luck when they got a guy with a foot issue a long time ago, and David Terrell also came from the Big Ten, played a different position. But, I'd just be wildly guessing about something I know nothing about, which is, his foot issue. But if he's clean, top three. The only way he probably goes to three is if the quarterback gets in there at the top, right?
Yeah, but if he's clean is a huge caveat, because if he's clean, the story isn't a story. And if he avoids surgery now, does that mean he avoids it next year?
Forever.
Or forever. I don't know. Yeah, about a stress reaction is very concerning.
Yeah, I'm with you there. But if it's, you know what? If it's concerning enough at three or four, or drops him out of the top five, are the Bears really in a spot to take a shot on that guy at 10? You know what I mean?
I don't think so. Do you?
They need dudes that can help.
Yeah.
They need dudes that can produce. They've got to
dudes that aren't pre-injured.
Yeah, right. So that would be really hard. I mean, listen, they played it super conservative in free agency in Ryan Poles' first year with the defensive tackle Larry Ogunjobi. Remember, they had a 14 million dollar a year deal over 3 years on the table for Ogunjobi,
and they flunked him.
And yeah, they brought him in. They failed him on the physical, but it took so much time from the point that they had agreed to the deal to him to get in and do the physical that a lot of the other guys that maybe they would have pivoted to were off the board. And the agent was really pissed off. Like I ran into the guy last night. He's still steaming about this.
Wow.
Larry Ogunjobi, by the way, has played in a lot of games for the 48 games for the Pittsburgh Steelers over the last three seasons.
Oh,
so that foot is, yeah. Well, I'm just saying the foot issue
is not real.
Goes to show you can play it conservative, and maybe the Bears will tell you it was the right call at the right time for him, and you gotta go with your professionals, the people you lean on. But Larry Ogunjobi hasn't missed time with the foot issue as a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Have they made a decision on the quarterback yet? I heard from someone that
Steelers?
Yeah, they're moving on from Russ, and they want Justin Fields to come back, but they're probably going to take one.
Yeah,
But they'll take one in the draft.
Yeah,
you haven't heard that?
It's been great to be kind of free of quarterback discussion.
Gosh,
at this time of year,
especially with all the names floating around and all the possibilities right now.
Oh, yeah, like the Matthew Stafford thing's a little wild.
It's a little crazy. Yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you're the Rams.
If you were covering that would be the horror story of all time. Trying to figure out if Aaron Rodgers would be. I just think about all the names that are out there. Yeesh.
Yeah, that would be, and Darnold, and it's that's why the next, what are we at Friday? Yeah, I mean, the next couple weeks here is going to be really, really entertaining.
Never stops. Good stuff, Brad.
Great stuff, Biggsy. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs. He's the football man of the Chicago Tribune.
Larry Ogunjobi was a regular and a stalwart on the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line.
And he was going to be the guy that was going to be the featured player.
He was the engine.
That Flusi had to have.
He was the engine.
The three technique
of the defense.
He had to have. And they got, what's his name? The kid from Oakland, Justin.
Justin Jones.
And he was mediocre at best.
He was terrible, but he wasn't great.
He's better than I'm saying. I said mediocre at best. You just described him as not terrible, but not great. Isn't that mediocre?
I was reinforcing and supporting your opinion.
I thought you were arguing with me.
No, I'm not arguing with you.
Why do you argue with
me? I'm not arguing.
312-644-6767. See, we don't know what kind of defensive tackle that Dennis Allen likes, right? We don't know if there's a certain type of player. It's not a three technique. It's a different defense, but we don't know how he feels.
Yeah, pretty good idea, but you're right. Yeah. Specifically, maybe we don't. I also wanted to get back into this Abdul Carter thing.
Okay, good. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 the score.
Let's talk right now about Abdul Carter, the Penn State stud edge, potential number one overall pick. Someone who said this week it is combine press availability that he believes he is the number one player in the draft. He is not going to work out this week. He actually, during medical testing here, had a stress reaction discovered in his foot. My understanding, it is a very small spot, something that is not given him pain. And when he's talked to doctors, he has told them that. This is not something that hurts me. Surgery was considered to be a possibility, but agent Drew Rosenhaus, who represents the players, said that they are not opting for surgery, believe it is not necessary. He is going to perform at his pro day and believes he will have no issues going forward.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. So in a nutshell here, you've got one of the top players in the draft, maybe the top defensive player, maybe the top player in the draft in Abdul Carter. He goes to the combine. He goes through the medicals. They discover that he's got a stress reaction in his foot. They believe he's going to need to do a preemptive surgery. They're going to have to put a screw in his foot. And then you wait a day, and Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, says, never mind.
Dr. Rosenhaus.
Never mind. So don't even think about that. He's ready. He's going to work. He's going to set records working.
And for the record, you're not disputing, and we aren't disputing that report from Ian Rappaport. It's just that.
I'm just telling you the backstory.
The backstory, and it's also so much focus on the pro day. Like, well, he's okay. He's going to be able to do his pro day. That is so not the point. And I hope, as we said yesterday, that Abdul Carter has a stress-free, injury-free 10-year NFL career, and one day he's in Canton, Ohio, because he's that good potentially. He is that kind of player. He is Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett. He has that kind of future if he can stay healthy. But yesterday's reporting, because of his presence in Indianapolis, which is the purpose of the combine, revealing this stress reaction.
He didn't reveal the stress. They found it. The doctors look at you. They go over every element. They basically x-ray your body.
And let's just be honest here.
Yeah.
That's why it's easier to dismiss anything that comes out of the mouth of an agent.
An agent
is paid to cast this in the most positive light possible.
Oh, it's not going to impact his draft status.
Oh, no. Nothing to see here.
That's the report from the... Never mind.
So...
Don't worry about it.
I don't want to be skeptical or cynical, but I do want to be realistic. And realistically, there's huge risk involved in drafting Abdul Carter. It may never come to fruition.
The stress reaction may not turn fracture.
It may not.
But
he may never do.
He also has an issue with his shoulder. Let's not forget that.
Which is more short term.
It's a short term thing. It's just an AC joint.
Yeah.
But he hurt it in the Boise game, and then he played against Notre Dame played the full game and played
well.
That's
what football players do.
He's a good player.
That's what football players do.
But goodness gracious, the whole idea that, oh, yeah, we found something bad, that, you know, you don't care about that.
So to suggest that because of what that report suggested and what Drew Rosenhaus is saying now is there's no risk involved, so he's going to stay in the top three. Okay, maybe. It's still a lot of risk. And it just, if you're the Bears and he drops to 10, I think I'd ask what the other nine teams are thinking.
Different things happen. Some teams have different needs than you do.
They do. But, obviously.
But, I mean, I think everyone needs a pass.
Everybody could use a disruptor to the extent that Abdul Carter disrupts if he can stay on the field. And this raises some doubts about that. So I also want to make a distinction between, we addressed this a little bit yesterday, but you heard it throughout the day and you'll hear it throughout the pre-draft process that, well, in the number 10 or as he continues to drop, the Bears passed on Jalen Carter. They couldn't pass on Abdul Carter because it's the same type of situation. Passing on a guy for a character concern, which turned out to be maybe a misjudgment, isn't the same as passing on a guy for an injury reason.
It's completely different. When you're talking about a physical problem that they have noticed and said, oh, you know, you might need to do a proactive surgery on it, that means that they believe that it is a forthcoming issue that will impact him in his career. When you start talking about character issues, the question is, can we control them? Can we keep them off the streets? Can we make sure that we have a good enough situation, a good enough kind of discipline area for him to have things to do and not kind of get out of control? That is totally different than a physical injury that is on its way.
It's much easier to repair damaged character than it is a damaged bone.
Well, I mean, a physical problem can impact your career a lot more than, I mean, listen.
You can turn things around if you're Jalen Carter, and he appears to have done so, and congratulations to him. But no matter how committed you might be to being the best player possible, if you have a stress fracture in your foot, you're never going to get to where you want to be as a player. And so that is something to keep in mind. It's probably a moot point. The Bears won't have to face that. They'll have other considerations at the 10th spot. One of them will be trading down and accumulating maybe more picks, more players. I don't think that is a sexy option, but it is one that throughout the course of this week, as we've talked about the draft, makes more sense the more you think about it.
Randy Moss, when he was coming out, that was an example of concern about a character issue, right? Randy Moss, you know, go look up his life story. It's extraordinary. He was going to go to Notre Dame, and then he got implicated in this fight, which may not have been his fault, whatever. So he got a scholarship pulled. He ends up getting a scholarship pulled. He ends up at Marshall is where he ended up.
He ended up at Florida State first, and then
Florida
he ended up
State,
at Marshall.
Then Marshall. Yeah. He wanted to go to West Virginia at one point, almost went there. There were different scholarships pulled from him. Anyway, he shows up at the combine, and he says he doesn't turn up at the combine. He says he's got a dental problem. The whole combine believes he doesn't show up because he doesn't want to give a urine sample during his medical, to be fairly blunt about it. I remember talking to Mark Hatley at the time, who was running the Bears, and the Bears were one of the teams that would have had a shot at him. And Hat said, I believe he'll score 10 touchdowns next year, but I don't know if we can control him. I don't know if we can keep him in check. There was this, you know, one of the things Mark said is he wanted to look in his mouth and see the dental work that he claimed had been done.
And didn't he also blow off a pre-draft meeting?
They brought him into Chicago. Yeah. He overslept and didn't go to a breakfast they had arranged with the owner. They felt that they couldn't trust him, so they didn't draft him.
Yeah.
He goes to Minnesota, begins his Hall of Fame career, and was a nightmare every time you played the Vikings. But
he's a Hall of Fame receiver.
Is the juggling act you do as a draft maven, as a guy that's in charge of bringing someone in your organization. It's a tough thing to do. It's tough to say, well, you know, the talent was never in question with Randy Moss. It was these other issues that were sort of hanging over him that turned out to be absolutely false.
Well, you can make false assumptions about character judgments, and you can be wrong because maybe it's just more about judgment and your own instincts. But when you're looking at a X-ray, it's a lot easier to interpret.
Exactly.
And so it's not so much what Abdul Carter looks like on film, it's what his x-rays look like on film.
Yes, exactly. So, right. There you go.
That's the problem with him. Hopefully it's all taken care of, and if he has a procedure, it doesn't get in his way. You know, the Bears will have a lot of options. They'll have a lot of, things at number 10. You talk about Bigsy. Shamar Stewart yesterday gives them something to consider as well because of how much Ryan Poles loves traits guys. I don't think that Shamar Stewart ran his way into the top 10, but he certainly – you could see some teams falling in love with those numbers and seeing him as a disruptor on the defensive line and taking a chance. I mean, he's a top half of the first round guy now.
Yeah, I mean, I told you, if it were me, and it doesn't matter how good he's going to be, and I understand the difference between the NFL game and the college game. I had a buddy who played at Purdue. He said there was one guy drafted off his team, and he was a backup corner, but he ran like a 4.3 40. You'll draft guys like that. You do that, not in the first round, but you will take guys that can play very fast because the difference in the game. Having said that, if I don't see it on tape, if I don't see a guy who's a football player and makes plays, I'm not sure I would risk a high draft pick on him.
No, I don't think I would either. I'm looking for football players. I'm not looking for guys who make my weight room, look like it's doing its job. I'm not looking for the all-airport team, so to speak. And you need those guys, certainly, but you need productive football players. And the Bears, at 10, have an opportunity to get one. This weekend, you'll hear a lot about the offensive line crew, Kelvin Banks, and Josh Simmons, and Will Campbell. Will Campbell is the most intriguing to me because I've seen him, the mock drafts are coming out this week, and you see Will Campbell as high as fourth going off the board and as low as maybe, after the Bears draft. I wonder about, if he would still be there at 10, if he's their top tackle on their board, if they would just pounce. And that's a pretty simple thing. If not, do you have the opportunity to trade down and accumulate another player or two for a team that needs it?
The knock on Will Campbell, and there's only one knock I've heard, which is his arm length. You want a guy that has long enough. What is it? What are his arms? 32 and a half or something? You kind of want 34. You want somebody that can get out on the field and be able to manhandle the giant defensive or the very fast defensive ends you're going to play. And there is question, but he barely missed blocked when he was in college at a high level in the SEC. So I don't know that would prevent you from taking him. And if you did take him and he couldn't play left tackle, he could certainly play in the interior of the line. I mean, he's a really good player.
He's a really good player. And the comparison has been made to Peter Skronsky from Northwestern, who was with the Titans and was a tackle and plays guard, and he was taken first in the first round. And I do believe that they're probably fairly happy with that pick. And if Will Campbell has a kind of success that Peter Skronsky has had or can be a fixture on your offensive line, it's 10 is a good spot to take him. Darnell Wright has been an above-average draft pick. He's not been as dominant as maybe people thought he might be early on, but he's still a youngish player, and I think Ben Johnson sees him. Boy, if he doesn't see greatness in him, I don't know what he's doing comparing him to Penei Sewell.
Yeah.
But that was a surprise and maybe a bit of a reach. But the point is, you can get a bookend component to Darnell Wright at 10 if you just go with Will Campbell or an offensive tackle like that.
And again, we don't know. We have no idea what Kieran Amagaji is. And we don't know how an offseason will help him. We know he was a guy taken from a really good school in the Ivy League that wasn't ready to play in the NFL as a rookie, came in injured, had no camp, and looked lost when they played him. But we have no idea. He's a bright kid. We have no idea how much he's going to be able to absorb what he needs to do.
Or spend in the weight room.
Well, someone said he's working out with Olin, so he's working out.
Oh, wow.
At his weight room.
That would be interesting.
That would be great to see.
That's a good guy to work out with.
We'll have to ask Olin about it.
It's a good choice and decision.
It'll be genius on his part, but he's a bright kid.
Well, that's a smart decision.
Right.
So how much did the Bears miss out on Trey Smith. We need to address that again because I think people feel very deflated by that news, and I don't think a lot of people were terribly surprised, but it is something worth addressing.
Yeah, I wasn't stunned when they took him, or when they tagged him, I mean, just because it didn't make a lot of sense that you were going to try to fix your line but let one of your best linemen go, right? So it doesn't surprise me. But it's, you know, they could have tagged him earlier. They're tagging him at the end of February, and they'll have a decision to make. Do you think there's any chance they're just trying to get something from him?
Maybe so.
Would you trade for him?
No, I don't think they're going to probably do that. I think they want to keep him. I understand why they're going to restructure things to make that possible. Okay. But now what do the Bears do? 312-644-6767.
Mully and Haw on the Score.
Well, the Chiefs are using their franchise tag on Pro Bowl guard Trey Smith. And a lot of people wondered whether this would be possible. Some people doubted that they would use a franchise tag on a guard, considering that the offensive line franchise tag is about $24 million, which automatically makes Trey Smith the highest paid guard in the National Football League, in NFL history. And a lot of people wondering whether they would trade Trey Smith. That's not the plan. The plan is to get a long-term deal done with Trey Smith. And the fact of the matter is, I'm sure there are teams across the NFL, namely in Chicago, that are a little bit disappointed that Trey Smith has the franchise tag. But Kansas City knows a good player when it sees one. And free agency is about not letting your best players get out the door, thus the franchise tag on Trey Smith.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is Adam Schefter reporting that exactly what we expected would happen.
It's a good lesson. It's a good lesson or reminder. Let's say that, reminder more than lesson. Teams can always find ways to finagle through the salary cap issues that they face. You don't always have to count on the cap increasing, but you know that the Chiefs, when you look at what they're projected to do to maybe be able to fit that one-year, $23.5 million commitment to Trey Smith under the cap, Patrick Mahomes is going to restructure his deal. They're going to convert a roster bonus into a signing bonus. They're going to do a variety of things so they can work the cap and manipulate the cap so there's room to pay your most valuable offensive lineman. And all of this talk over the last month or so about how the Chiefs are going to be, they're in cap hell. Are you really ever in salary cap hell in the NFL? You have less money to spend maybe on free agents, but maybe the good teams don't need it.
Well, as well said, you know, there's one other element of this that you got to take under consideration, which is that, you know, Henry Louis Smith Jr., a.k.a. Trey Smith, is a guy who came into the league in a later round pick. He came in because he fell in the draft because there were concerns. He had a medical concern. Mm-hmm. And I guess my point is they got a bargain on this guy for years. So if you have to overpay him for a year or while you figure out your salary cap, and, you know, we know that Kelsey has announced that he's coming back, so they know they're going to have to they're going to have money coming off the books. He's coming back for his last year, right? So they know they'll have more money in a year from now, but they're still willing to move other pieces to keep Trey Smith. And it's very interesting to me that you got a bargain on a player who's now reached a point where now you got to pay him. Well, maybe you're more willing to pay him because, you know, you save so much money on him.
Well, that's one reason. The other reason is it tells me they're done with their film study of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He didn't have a good game, but certainly you need an offensive line to protect your quarterback.
Well, yes.
You want to get back to the Super Bowl, you rebuild your offensive line because it was terrible against the Eagles, and that's the biggest reason you were unable to beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. So Trey Smith returning gives them one less thing to worry about as they rebuild their offensive line in Kansas City. Much easier to do there because of their success level and everything else. So the Bears have to regroup and pivot.
Let me ask you this. So he's making $23.7 million on the franchise tag.
Yeah.
Is that it? That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
They're going to have to clear out some space.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys that they're talking about is the safety.
Justin Reed is probably gone.
Does that mean that you now are in the safety market?
Without a doubt. But there's some other good safeties on the market, in the open market. There's some pretty good year for veteran free agent safeties. Justin Reed is one of those guys that might be a casualty as they reconfigure things. And if he is, then you're the Bears. Much like you went to Kevin Byard last year, yep. You might want to inquire about Justin Reed this year.
I agree. All right, 312-644-6767. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to bring in the Coom Dog. Ron Coomer will join us, and we'll talk to some Cubs baseball. I want to know what he thinks about half the infield leaving for, what are we calling it, the international opener?
But the international opening day.
Not to be confused with the domestic
opening day.
Okay.
Don't get confused.
Dustin's now knocking down his ultras. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.